Welcome back to As If with Lisa Fivral, a contemporary art podcast. I filmed this episode yesterday and it actually turned out really well. And the problem with this episode is that it requires energy, okay? Because it is an art-heavy episode, okay? And I managed to explain everything so well yesterday, and then I realized that the audio wasn't fucking recording. And it is driving me insane today, because that means that I have to re-record everything. And it's quite dark out today, so if you see me with massive under eye circles, it's just my vibe, okay? I think that you guys should just expect it, to be honest. I know the thumbnail is going to be a little bit insane because it's going to be Kandinsky and then red, white, and royal blue, and it's like, okay, why the fuck are those two together? But the reason for it is very simple, actually. It is because I wanted to talk about Kandinsky, and then I also wanted to talk about red, white, and royal blue. I don't know what to tell you. There's no fucking logic to this. to this particular thing, okay? In general, I'm pretty good with logic. Anyway, Kandinsky. So we're going to talk about Vasily Kandinsky today. And this guy is an abstract artist from early 20th century. I mean, he was obviously born in the late 19th century, but it's just his most important work happened in the early 20th century. He is one of those people that you will definitely hear about if you're talking about abstract art. And by abstract art, I don't mean abstract expressionism. I think that a lot of people who watch my videos and listen to this podcast are from America. So I assume that you're probably more familiar with abstract expressionism. And whenever you think of abstract art, you probably think about Jackson Pollock. But Jackson Pollock and his work came way, way, way later, after the first mainstream kind of abstract art has taken place in Europe. If you are unfamiliar with Kandinsky entirely, what would kind of introduce you to him best is the fact that he's just like one of those guys who had squiggly lines and colorful blobs on his canvases. And the thing with talking about abstract art is that, or modern art in general, is that oftentimes people kind of say things like, well, I could have painted that. And they oftentimes think that it's kind of like a good gotcha moment, or, you know, point, which it really isn't, mostly because that's the whole point of abstract art in general. And modern art in general, is that those works were revolutionary in that context alone, okay? If you're plopping this exact artwork in our time, you can obviously continue and, you know, making money, I guess. I think that you're probably going to be able to somehow frame your work as art. But the fact of the matter is, the reason why abstract artists painted what they painted differs a lot from one artist to another. My dog asked to come up on the couch, so now I have to hold my computer and my book and my notes all on my lap, and she's looking at me like, why are you complaining? Like, what the hell? What you have to understand about the time that Kandinsky was working in is that non-representational art, or not very realistic or hyper-realistic art, has been on the rise, but more in the symbolic form. So oftentimes when you think about abstract art, you're thinking about artists who were trying to represent certain emotions, for example, certain scenes, you know, in an abstract form. Kandinsky is always brought up in conversation about synesthesia. Synesthesia is usually like this sensory connection between two senses. So for example, you would say that color red and letter A are kind of correlated. So you cannot think of letter A without thinking of it as a red letter. Same with letter B and green color, for example, right? So Kandinsky was one of those artists who believed that synesthesia is just one of those things that are connected to spirituality, and that art of the time needed to move on from representational qualities and move on to its more essential qualities. So for example, line and color, which is somewhat similar to what constructivists thought, right? So if you think about Malevich and his black square, you will think about breaking down of the pictorial space down to something very, very basic, right? Like shapes, colors, lines. However, with Kandinsky, he wasn't interested in formalist ideas, you know? He wasn't really interested in looking at the reality of those lines, tactile qualities of them. I also think that Kandinsky's theories are really interesting because he was basically trying to explain with these more essential kind of qualities of painting or creating why there is even a need to create. And I think that he was kind of searching for it his entire life, and it is mostly the reason why he oftentimes collaborated with other artists from other disciplines. So for example, with musicians specifically, Kandinsky was interested in music and note correlation to colors, right? This is actually something that I was very much interested in when I was in university, especially in first or second year. I've done a lot of works that were specifically trying to translate music to painting, to colors, right? I would make my own compositions, like musical compositions, and then try to figure out how to paint them in a way that wouldn't be just kind of an associative thing, as much as it would break down the ideas down to its more essential forms and then try to translate them, which is a little bit too much of a correlation with linguistics, you know what I mean? Like translating one thing to another, which is not something that Kandinsky was super hyper fixated on, because he was trying to kind of figure out the spiritual part of it all as well. So to him, he like wrote a whole book that was called Concerning the Spiritual in Art, where he explained that some correlations, some ideas of why a color could be a descriptor of something on its own, and how it can be a descriptor of something in combination with a very basic shape. By the way, turns out that Kandinsky's family is from the same area that I'm from in Siberia, like next to the Mongolian border. A lot of the most important works that Kandinsky worked on were created during his time in Germany, when he was working with his artists, like colleagues from the group called Der Blue Reiter. How do I pronounce that? If you're a German, can you please tell me how to pronounce that? Because I do not know. But so this is a passage that kind of explains Kandinsky's interest in synesthesia, and specifically synesthesia of notes and colors, right? So he tried to substantiate a secret inner relationship between the stimulus of color and its psychological spiritual effect on the viewer by applying the speculations which were current at the time, particularly among symbolist artists. The reason why Kandinsky thought that it was more of a thing in art as a whole, not just in visual art, is because he was also listening to Albert Schoenberg, as well as Matisse and Picasso. You know, he kind of just was pointing around being like, see, we are trying to see beyond what is reality, or rather focus on what makes our work as artists impactful than just like looking at something in real life. A lot of the paintings that Kandinsky created that were, you know, like composition number 5 were about the Last Judgment, apocalypse, renewal, resurrection, rebirth, a lot of themes that are quite popular in Russian folklore and fairy tales. At the same time as he was working on it, he commented on something that I think that we're all thinking about when we're looking at those paintings, and that is, what makes this really any different than just a bunch of shapes on a piece of paper, right? Like, what is there even a fucking difference? Like, what's the point of just painting all that? Is there some kind of logic or some kind of key that you can use to understand this? He was aware of the dangers presented by a meaningless autonomy of form and color. He said, if we begin at once to break the bonds which bind us to nature and devote ourselves purely to combination of pure color and abstract form, we shall produce works which are mere decoration, which are suited to neckties and carpets. Beauty of form and color is no sufficient aim by itself. This is the reason why Kandinsky tried to explain this, the synesthesia effect and the value of colors to compare to musical notes in his works. In many of those paintings, Kandinsky is walking on thin line between the extremes of dead abstraction, you know? This way lies today between two dangers. On the one hand is the totally arbitrary application of color to geometrical form, pure patterning. on the other hand, is the more naturalistic use of color and bodily form, pure fantasy. He kind of oscillated between the two. His compositions were a little bit more logical in terms of having a kind of like a key as to what means what. However, I personally found a lot of issues in trying to translate music to visual forms, especially painting, because at its core, music is inherently something that has a feeling of an era of time. There is a direction to music. Music starts and music ends. It has pauses, it has rhythm. And colors on a piece of canvas can, of course, suggest rhythm, for example, with contrast, saturation, things like that, you know, shapes in terms of how blended they are and how blunt the edges are of different types of shapes. But it doesn't actually have linearity like time does, right? You can't just say that a painting started and a painting ended, because it's not a performance piece, it's just a piece. And it should be available in a way to be read, right? So when you think about it, that's what I at least found in my work, why I had to kind of move on from that specific way of approach, was because I personally do not think that it's possible to have this linearity to an image, a still image, right? I think that maybe video can be a good translation of music, but a single image, I'm not sure. Because the thing is, I thought about it in terms of like, how can I logically make every single one of them make sense, in a sense that people could turn on the music, listen to it, and then they can look at the painting and specifically go across it, like read it in quotations, in a way that would make sense, you know, like how that would correlate to where each note was rhythmically in terms of time and in terms of when it reached the viewer, right? Or the listener. If you think about, oh, we can do it in the same way as we write letters on a piece of paper. So for example, from left to right, following the writing criteria. This doesn't exactly work, because at its core, colors are not like the alphabet. They're also not culture and language specific. So for example, if someone who speaks a language where you read from right to left, or you flip pages from right to left, you're going to be left confused, because the way that you would be reading the painting would be completely backwards. So technically speaking, I mean, I guess you can create a cacophony of colors that would match the cacophony of sounds in the musical piece, but it still doesn't work, because the musical piece needs rhythm to be different from every other composition. So I think that the real way you can actually understand Kandinsky is just to allow for the mystical to kind of guide the experience, because the way that he looked at it was, he said in one of the catalogs of an exhibition where he had his works shown, the expression of mystery by means of mystery, is that not the content? Is that not the conscious or unconscious purpose of the compulsive need to create? Man expresses the superhuman to man. This is the language of art. He has, however, had his views thoroughly examined and challenged. He did not get to just kind of say, oh, it's just spiritual, it is what it is, you can experience it however you want. His actual experience of being an artist was very much shaped by the time that he was creating in. As a painter that was Russian and lived through the revolution, he has gone through the transition of many avant-garde artist in Russia, going from symbolism to formalism and constructivism in general. Those two movements are so different. Symbolism is, as you can imagine, works that kind of use icons, indexical images, whichever ones you want to pick, as means of explaining something or creating a metaphor that was visual, right? And when it comes to constructivists and formalists, they did not give a flying fuck about anything that's not grounded in reality. Formalists were the main group that kind of had the most influence at the time, I guess. And the way that they were talking about it was that, I am not alone in believing in the deep, absolute seriousness of this painter, speaking of Kandinsky. I also believe that this man has talent. Nevertheless, Kandinsky's artistic achievements are insignificant. As long as his work remains in the sphere of pure spiritualism, he conveys certain impressions, but as soon as he begins to speak about the language of things, he becomes not only a bad craftsman, but simply a vulgar and thoroughly mediocre artist too. I think that just the influence of so many artists questioning him and so many critics questioning him and his ideas made him a little bit more hesitant. So a lot of works that he's done in that period were a little bit shaky in terms of their convictions. Like, it wasn't as impactful or as unapologetic as his first compositions that were really grand and had a lot to do with spirituality, right? Eventually, Kandinsky was kind of, I would assume that he was probably tired of constantly having to prove his ideas or try to convince people of his ideas when they weren't really into that at that point, especially because a lot of this gritty and kind of more realistic look at things was due to the fact that the country was struggling in terms of so many people being in poverty before the fall of the monarchy and the entirety of the country having to be restructured. When a lot of people are having a hard time with, you know, finding shelter, food, and basic necessities, those people are not really fond of talking about things that are a little bit more up in the air. So obviously a lot of people were not fond of artists who were not as down to earth as constructivists, because it's kind of like, what are you doing, right? Like, we're all starving and we gotta figure this shit out. There's civil war going on. We can't be selfish like this and just sit in our, you know, little ivory towers just painting shit that's about our soul and experience of spirituality or whatever, you know? So obviously he couldn't have gotten a lot of support in that regard. The expressiveness with which Kandinsky analyzed form distinguished him from the Russian constructivists. So he was definitely more about shapes as a way of describing the essential qualities of experience that he was alluding to, you know, like, for example, the Judgment Day or whatever, right? A statement Kandinsky made sometime later makes the point that he was trying to make to all the constructivists, right? The meeting of the pointed angle of a triangle and a circle is not less effective than the finger of God touching Adam's finger in Michelangelo. Just because an artist uses abstract methods, it does not mean that he is an abstract artist. It doesn't even mean that he is an artist. Just as there are enough dead triangles, there are just as many dead roosters, dead horses, or dead guitars. One can just as easily be a realist academic and an abstract academic. A form without content is not a hand, just an empty glove full of air. I guess that they were just fundamentally not really compatible when one group thought that it was like the abstract work was all about its essential qualities in a sense of reality, the actual materials and forms. And Kandinsky was just trying to break down more spiritual experiences that you get from a painting or from any other type of art form and put it down on a canvas. Does that make any sense? Did I explain it well in any shape or form? I think that's what I found to be the biggest challenge when working on my own synesthesia-related paintings. And that was specifically the fact that I would try to make kind of like a translation, a specific key. And as I've said, there's a lot of logic, a lot of logical issues in terms of how do you translate the rhythm? How do you translate the timing? When something is supposed to happen, or how someone is supposed to view the work. Even though it was very entertaining to do this whole thing, like, it was very genuinely interesting to think about what notes a melody has and how you can translate it into a painting, I did think that it is a little bit too on the nose in many ways. Rather, it is definitely going to still be symbolic in one way or another, you know? Like, I think there's too much speculation involved in it. And when you try to rewrite everything, like, kind of like, oh, the note C is yellow, you get to a point where it's just a one-to-one translation that's not actually logically sound, while at the same time, it's not really saying much of anything anyway. I think that it could create a cool experience to a certain extent. Like, I definitely enjoyed making an installation where I used the music and I would have the painting that correlates with that music projected onto like a sculptural kind of thing that I created out of boxes. I think I painted them white or something along those lines, and the structure would be more like a square, for example, on one side, but then on the other side it would be a fragmented kind of shape, right? Because it's not the same amount of boxes on each side, and some of them are open, some of them are closed, some of the boxes are missing, whatever. So each side would have a little bit of a fragmented kind of version of the same painting. But I kind of found that you could turn up the saturation and maybe turn down the saturation or contrast, whatever, with the music to kind of like give you like a sense of what to pay attention to the most in it. I will probably have like a clip in the video version of the podcast, but I think that genuinely it becomes a little bit futile in many ways. And at the same time, I think that it's kind of impossible to avoid symbolism in art in general, unless you are kind of like a constructivist, when you just paint something on a piece of paper and you're like, I am so interested in the fact that this is a piece of paper and this is paint on top of it. You know, like, I don't know. I think that symbolism is kind of one of those things that is very difficult to avoid, because even when I try not to symbolically explain what I mean, I still assign new symbolic meaning to things. Like, even if I'm not using some kind of symbolism that is very well known to people, or I don't use something that is universally accepted, like, for example, red not being associated with a calm vibe going on, you know, like it's either love or anger or whatever, but it's usually an intense emotion. If I'm not using those conventions in my work, I create my own conventions that are kind of like a key as to how to read that work. But I don't know if that is even kind of an interesting way of looking at art in general. I don't know, girl. Did that make any sense? Is it too much for like a first time of talking about abstract art and Kandinsky? Should I have kind of eased us in and had like a bit of a chill kind of introduction of him first, and then get into how he's different from other abstract artists, or specifically constructivists? I don't know. Maybe I should have. The last time I worked on my visual art in a more traditional sense, not like where I try to inject it into my YouTube work, my media work, but when I'm actually working specifically in the fine arts realm, I was focusing more on relativity and relativity of symbols. And I'm still interested in that. I still want to make more works that are related to how different imagery and their positionality to each other can create an overall more complex view of something. So creating like a big installation art with a lot of pieces that are related to each other, right? Anyway, let's talk about something fun. So let's talk about Red, White, and Royal Blue, okay? First and foremost, I was gonna play the little jingle for the music segment. Movie segment. But girl, I don't like the jingles. I need to fix them. I'm not vibing with them at all. Like, I don't know, they just don't hit. I feel like they're a little bit too long and the beat is not... It's a little bit annoying to me. I don't know. Anyway, so I watched Red, White, and Royal Blue because the thing is, I wasn't planning on it, okay? I don't really watch movies that often in general. And when I do watch a movie, it's usually because I just want to stare at something that is visually so stunning in not in a impressive special effects kind of way, but rather a very unique language that a director has created. Like, for example, I watch Tarkovsky's movies even though they're fucking 3 hours long and they're really slow at times, but I cannot look away from them for some fucking reason. Like, that's the type of movie I will get out of my way to go watch. But most of the time I don't fucking watch movies. I have a hard time watching them unless they're really, really fucking funny. Then we might talk about it, you know, then maybe. Or if the art direction, like the set design and everything, is fucking beautiful, then we can talk about it, okay? But the thing is, I saw a couple of clips of this movie on TikTok and I was like, wow, why do they have chemistry though? Why do they have chemistry? Like, I kind of want to watch it though, because I haven't seen a fucking rom-com or some shit like that with really good chemistry in like 300 years. I'm not gonna lie to you. Yeah, about that much, about that long, okay? And I just didn't think that, you know, even movies that have like straight couples or whatever, where I could kind of insert myself into the situation mentally, it doesn't work for me. So I was like, I don't know about two dudes, like how am I gonna, like how is that gonna vibe with me? And then I saw a clip and I was like, oh wow, okay, so they actually do have chemistry. Interesting. So I watched it and I got notes. So first and foremost, the two leads, hot as hell. Yeah. Second of all, they carried the fucking movie, okay? Because the thing is, camera work, set design, vibes, everything. It's fine. It's just like, if you're watching it, you're watching it for the leads and for their vibes, you know? Like, I kind of was watching on double speed whenever they were not really like together on screen, because it was just not hitting, you know? But also there is a scene that made me want to talk about it in my podcast, because I was like, what the fuck is this? They were at a party, okay? This like a New Year's party, and the entire time I was like, what the hell is going on? Turn down the lights. Who lit up the scene? Who lit up the space that they're in? I'm just wondering, because like, what the fuck is going on? Seriously, the lighting is so bright, I should not be able to see your goddamn pores from this far away when we're at a New Year's party. Like, it needs to be dark enough that I can only see you well, like really clearly, if you're this fucking close to me, okay? You get it? Anyway, the setup itself was like a little bit too much of a middle school dance rather than a son of a president New Year's party. It was just funky as hell. I'm not gonna lie to you, but girl, like the kiss scenes and everything, they hit, okay? They hit. I was kind of giggling, twirling my hair and swinging my feet, like what the fuck was that about? Like, It was so fucking cute. It's crazy, okay? Second of all, is it a second point? I don't know. I simply had to make like a little TikTok because I saw this this audio clip where the actor who plays the prince, he's got like, the first clip is a sound from the Red, White, and Royal Blue. And then the second clip is from the new movie Bottoms. By the way, somebody send this to Rachel Sennett, I beg you. Because why the fuck am I not able to watch the movie anywhere in Vancouver? What the hell? I thought we were pals. I thought we were neighbors. What the hell? Like, what am I supposed to do? Wait until it comes out in some other way? That's gonna take forever. It's just so inappropriate, so rude. And I would understand if I would lived in like buttfuck nowhere, but I live in Vancouver, girl. Girl. Whatever. Oh yeah, so the second clip was of the character that he plays in Bottoms, and that character is like kind of like a douchey jock, I'm assuming. I haven't seen the movie, by the way, Rachel Sennett. I'll play you a clip right now.
I don't think you know me at all. I can't afford to be reckless.
I'm sorry that I looked at Mrs. Riley and lightly grazed her left tit, all right?
Yeah. So I thought it was funny as hell. So I, especially because I just don't understand this dude's acting credits. His career trajectory is really, really funny to me. And I don't, not in a bad way, like he's doing well right now. And like, he's gonna have like a movie come out with Anne Hathaway. And I saw the picture because someone was posting, I love to see a picture or two of Anne Hathaway, just saying. So I saw a picture of Anne Hathaway and I was like, she looks the hottest she's ever looked. She's 40. What the fuck is this? Like, I mean, I guess it's really good for me to know that there's like even more peaking that I could do in like 15 years. But girly girl, she's looking so hot, it's sickening. It's genuinely like rude. Have you seen it? Have you seen the pictures? It's gonna be like kind of like I'm assuming it's probably inspired by Harry Styles again, like kind of like movie based on that. But this time it's actually about like a boy band member doing things. Instead of like, oh, he looks like Harry Styles, but he's like an abusive asshole. You know what I mean? Like, it's a different kind of thing, apparently. I don't know. I haven't read the book. I don't even know what the book, what the name of the book is. Just look it up, like Anne Hathaway and Nick Galitzin. By the way, he's pronouncing his last name wrong. It's bothering me. Whatever. So I made a little video talking about how trying to understand Nicholas Galitzin's career is like as difficult as trying to understand the complexity of one soul, because what the fuck is going on? How did he go from playing like a gay boy to playing a Republican soldier in Purple Hearts, which is ugh, for the love of God. I just a little aside, I got like a few videos of people being like, oh my God, military man, and I'm like, huh? You guys need to stop with glorification of violent men. No offense. Anyway, so he, the fuck was I saying about him? Galitzin. Oh yeah, and then after Purple Hearts, we got, I don't know his entire career, so I'm just saying like from the ones that I remember. After Purple Hearts, it's Red, White, and Royal Blue, where he's a gay prince. And then after that, he's like a jock who's saying, oh, I'm sorry that I looked at Mrs. Something and lightly grazed her left tit. He said, don't pigeonhole me. Because what the hell? Like, this is so fucking funny. I can't. Was there anything else I was going to say about it? I don't think so. So another thing that I want to say, found a bunch of old pictures. I should probably post some. You guys are going to love seeing me at 14, like fucking around in Cyprus. I think that's going to be really funny for you to see. But I found a bunch of old pictures as well as there like some videos. I'm so glad that I grew up at a time when like filming videos and taking pictures or whatever was already so accessible that I can go back and look at a time when I was, you know, living in Cyprus and going to school there and see like actual videos of myself doing all that and like see the people that I was friends with back then. Anyway, I'm like low-key falling asleep and I have to go meet with my assistant. Loved chatting with you. Let me know if you have any questions about abstract art or Kandinsky or even my approach to it. If you have some questions because you want to maybe dive into that in your own personal art practice, let me know. Let's talk about our fave gay boys of the month, and I'll see you next week with another one of these. Bye.